Well, good morning, everyone. Wonderful to be here again and to see familiar faces and a very welcoming spirit when coming into this place, this environment with you all. You ever have those moments when you say, oh, what on earth did I say that for? Patriarchal influence on Christian experience. Sounded good at the time, but thank you. It's such a huge topic. So I'm asking your forgiveness if all we do is dabble a little bit and poke around the edges. That's about probably the best we can do. Well, I have to say I've had a lot of fun poking around and have taken quotes and things from various people. As I said, it's a huge topic, the amount of material there, the number of people that are seriously working to move things along, change things, both within community and culture, but also within the Christian experience, is heartening, is really heartening. So the patriarchal influence that I want to talk about is about systems. It's not about people. It's about systems, and it's not anti-male. I think that's something we need to say right up at the beginning, that yes, the patriarchal system does revolve around the predominance of male influence, but I'm very firmly convinced through quite a lot of conversations with men that patriarchy is as devastating to men as it is to women. Can be as devastating to men. And in some respects it's worse, because as you'll see, we'll go through the core tenets of patriarchy are about power and control and machismo and alpha male and all of that. And that can only be a certain number of men. And if you're not that, and you choose or have a character, have a cultural situation in which you are not an alpha male, then you are less than. And what's called into question is your masculinity. And I think that's more devastating than women being able to hide or find other ways of doing things or get sponsors or people who will support you. So I want to lay that out really clearly at the beginning, because I think patriarchy and the system that we have experienced and grown up with, it's our history, it's almost the history of civilization, is incredibly damaging to all of us. So just putting that aside, because it is about patriarchy and it is about women being dominated, then that's really what the bulk of what I would have to say is, not to talk about women so much, but to talk about that general effect on us as spiritual beings and where we have found ways of managing that patriarchal influence, which has been so devastating. And I'm bold enough to say that almost all of us sitting here would know something deeply within themselves where they have been affected, disadvantaged, hurt, or dismissed through the way the system works. That's culturally, but it's also spiritually and religiously as well. So it's very pervasive through all our aspects of our societal life. So my concern here is about recognising how it affects our personal faith and our own personal experience of God. I'm not ever going to be, I haven't been, an activist. I wasn't part of the Women for Ordination marches, or I probably never would be. I'm too timid for that. I'm not one of those. Just isn't me. But what I am activist about is encouraging and enabling people to connect with what is deeply true of their relationship with God within themselves. That is my activism, if you like. In doing this, coincidentally, and I thank the work of the Spirit here that Elise and I have been on the same page, in doing this, it just so happened that the Oscar nominations came out mid-January, and this was a bit out of the article in The Australian, written by a female journalist. And it says, being based on a doll really hurt Barbie at the Oscars. Although this film was nominated for Best Picture, Greta Gerwig was snubbed as director, and Margot Robbie left out of the Best Actress category. Omissions that caused a flood of outrage on the internet and from their colleagues. The Associated Press called Gerwig's snub one of the biggest shocks in recent memory. Some fans took it out on Ken. Well, that's very cute. As pointed out by one writer, Ryan Gosling being nominated for a supporting actor while Gerwig and Robbie were left out kind of proves the point of the movie, that the patriarchy is still with us. Gosling himself has said, there is no Barbie movie without Greta Gerwig and Margot Robbie, the two people most responsible for this history-making, globally celebrated film. I don't know if you follow that part of our society, but in the history of the Oscars, only one woman has ever been nominated as Best Director of a film. And so there's this predominance that men direct films. And that's the glass ceiling. So that sort of maybe trivial example, but very real example, goes along with the recent rise in the Me Too movements, feminism and activism about glass ceilings for women and so on. So the whole issue of the patriarchy being strong, being significant in our society, certainly leaves us with a cultural question for us, or a sociological question of how do we manage to live in that. And I mean we as women particularly, but as I said before, both, all of us, how do we live within that system and survive and be true to ourselves? And particularly, how do we recognise the influence of that on our own personal spiritual histories, the way our faith has developed, what we hold now to be really important and true in our spiritual lives, and where do we get that from? What are we basing that on? Are we basing it on patriarchal stories, dogmas, doctrines that have been created by men? Need to think about that. So just to sort of be clear about patriarchy and what it is. It is a system of a society or a government in which men hold the power and women are largely excluded from it. It affects everything. Social relationships, value systems, norms, behavioural patterns. And they're predominantly shaped by men, and which encourage a privileged position for men. Now, as soon as you just say all of that, you can think of the formal church in whatever ilk, but I guess the easiest one to land on is the Catholic Church and its rigid doctrinal structures around male authority. I guess the little phrase that popped up to me when I was thinking about that was, what I believe, I'm not Catholic, I've never been Catholic, but I believe what one says when one goes to confession is, bless me, Father, for I have sinned. Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. The role of the male in negotiating the spiritual condition of this applicant. So each of those, I think, this is a definition from a online dictionary. I think it also is a definition of what's happening in church or has happened in churches. That it does affect our social relationships. Bless me, Father. What sort of relationship is that? The values that are set of what's right and wrong, what we can and can't do, what is deemed to be morally good and upright and what is not. The norms, the doctrines, the Eucharist, the ways in which we are admitted into the presence of God through these things. The behaviour patterns, and just need to mention the Royal Commission on Institutional Abuse and the behaviour patterns that the patriarchy, if not sanctioned, covered up or let go, let slide. That makes me feel very sick, very sad. So also patriarchy, just to look at it sort of as more of an overview, it did arise in history. You know, I keep thinking, oh, it must be an animal thing. It must be that the male of the animal kingdom is so much stronger and able to dominate the female, and that must be where it came from. Most commentators don't even go there, but simply look at the history of male domination particularly and how it came into the church. It's not a universal fact. It belongs to cultures. It belongs to societies. It belongs to groups. It's not a universal truth. But it has a history based in violence and domination, in war and sexual violence. And this is Carol Christ, who you might recognise as one of the foremost feminist writers, getting on now, who says it's a system legitimated by religion. That's a bit of a kick in the guts, isn't it? That the system that has been legitimated by religion and has been put in place, therefore, as the intermediary between the adherent and their God. The conduit. I think history is really important because we come, if we look back at the time of Jesus and the Greek and Roman empires, women weren't citizens. They weren't given citizenry rights. In the Greek culture, they didn't have souls, so they weren't even part of the consideration of anything, really. They certainly weren't allowed to be outside of the home because the place for the women was in childbearing and comfort for the male. So there's no social history of women to go back to. In the Hebraic culture, the idea that women and animals were the chattels of the male is in the Old Testament. It is part of the society that Jesus is speaking to. And also that female sexuality was a commodity. You're expected to be virginal when you're married, or to be able to sell a daughter who was a virgin was deemed to be a pearl of great price, in some respect. I have to say that at this point I thought the whole idea of chattels and so on was something of the first century. And then I found this gem in the Irish Times of 1972. And there was a case brought by a man whose wife had had an affair in Ireland. This is very much a tangent here, so stick with me. And the case was brought before the judge that his wife's affair had harmed him, had damaged him. So he brought a case before the courts. And the judgment was that, yes, he had been harmed. In this country, says the judge, 1972, in this country a wife was regarded as a chattel, just as a thoroughbred mare or cow. And the jury was concerned merely with compensating Mr. Braun for the value of the loss of his wife and the damages to his feelings. He was awarded £12,000 by the judge. Of course, there was public outcry. The government had to step in and change this antiquated law that it was based on. The minister for the government responsible steps in. In response to their demands that he should repeal the law that deemed a woman to be her husband's property, the minister said that he didn't believe there was any need for urgent action on this matter and put it to one side. That's a tangent. So I just got so taken with that story. I thought, oh my goodness. You know, the whole concept of you owning another person, it ranks of slavery. So, getting back to the story, where women also suffered at the hands of the writers of the scriptures. Remember, the scriptures are not sanctioned until 378 in the Council of Nicaea. So the scriptures that we have are the product of the product of a couple of hundred years of gathering of material, of editing probably, of redaction, and quite possibly of creation of other parts of the story. That's all, you know, scholarly knowledge. So by 313, Constantine says that Christianity can be one of the Roman religions, that it's sanctioned. And that's the first time, 313, Jesus, we put it around 30 in his death. So 300 years later, Christianity is in Rome and it's sanctioned. But in that 300 years, the rise of the need to exclude anything of feminine divinity or feminine spirituality was taken on as a cause. So that by 378, when the first pope was ordained and the hierarchical situation had been set up, it's a monotheistic religion, and monotheism says there's only one God, which is what we've all grown up with, whereas before that, there's a history in all the ancient cultures of polytheistic religions, including female adherents, female gods. Now, that will probably jar with you. Because we are a monotheistic religion. We do adhere to what's been taught to us, that there is one God. I absolutely, absolutely believe that. So the issue is not about, is there a female God floating around somewhere? The issue is the consolidation of the patriarchy through this declaration in the monotheistic culture, there is one God and that God is male. How many of you have grown up knowing that the Trinity is Father, Son and Holy Spirit, and of course they're all men? That's our culture. That's what we've grown up with. So I'm not pulling it down or anything, but I do just want to point out that we have inherited something that we don't have to just sit with and say, That's where it's always been, because it hasn't. A long time ago, and a lot of people have suffered in the meantime. A very interesting little another tangent with this idea of patriarchy as a system of government that put in place a male monotheistic culture is what's happening in Gaza. What's happening in Gaza is the clash of two patriarchal systems based on monotheistic cultures. Don't know what you do with that, but I find it interesting. So, of course, when you start talking about Gaza, or you start talking about Ukraine, or you start talking about Somalia, sexual violence is certainly there. And sexual violence on women is part of the demeaning of women. So what is the core of patriarchy about? It's about power, about control. I need to control you. I need to control how you think. I need to control how you relate to your God. Of course, you can ask why, but that's another sermon. And the outcome. The outcome, I found this little clip, which I'll read out. So, the outcome for women over that history now, I think, has been captured in this little piece here about the fear of being teased. And I just note, I'm going to go, sorry, I'll just go back, because talking about power and control and domination, the core issue here is that women think differently. Psychological fact, proven research. Women engage with the world differently. You all know they're more emotive. They're intuitive. They're grounded in reality, in the messiness of childbirth and life. A masculine approach to life is more conceptual, lives in the world of ideas, intellectual ideas, thinking and control. So one of the underlying factors in all of this is, how do you control somebody's intuition? How do you control somebody who loves something in a particular way that doesn't fit the way you think they ought to love something? How do you do that? And that's the underlying problem here all the time. So out of that then, what women, I think, and I hear a lot, and I don't know if any of you women here have experienced this, but you have this fear of being teased, of appearing superstitious or being irrational, and inhibits many from sharing mystical experience, that is deep personal knowledge that they have known God, they have known something of the Spirit in their lives in a non-formal, non-normal way. It inhibits many from sharing mystical experience that may have or could have been a turning point in their faith development, if it were acknowledged and supported by others. And I have to say, one of the reasons I'm quite happy to come to this congregation is because I think that defines your congregation. That I hear, I mean, I don't know, just speaking out of turn here, but I feel that this is more of an eclectic group where your experiences are varied and you've found a place where you can support one another and allow that freedom. And I commend that. So parents or clergy would label women as foolish or heretical if they discussed any kind of mystical experience. Even discussing mystical happenings with a therapist could lead you to being diagnosed as delusional. Insights gained from experience And this is where my focus is. Insights gained from experience are not really welcomed or good conversation at gatherings. To speak about your spiritual reality or tell another about your mystical experiences out of your own philosophical insights only becomes possible for many when they have found friends with a measure of spiritual depth. I certainly spend a long time in a congregation in which it was a common thing to say that women are just emotional, so we can't listen to them in this church context. They're just somewhere out there with the fairies, I think. I don't know what it is. And equally that the psychological delving into one's inner psychological realities is taboo. You don't trust psychologists, you don't trust people who want to go into your inner space like that. That was what I was in for a long time, and I probably supported it. And I'm sorry now, but that's the wisdom of having grey hair. You get to see the reality. So this experience then of women, of being dismissed, belittled, laughed at, ostracised. Ostracism is a wonderful tool of patriarchy. You're very welcome at our church. Come and join us, but sit over there. No, we don't need you on the roster. Don't ask those sorts of questions. That's not what we do here. Ostracism works really well. And what do? They leave. So you have a lovely homogeneous congregation that all agrees. There's no individual contribution of what God is saying to those people that can be contributed to the well-being of that church. Of course, the whole going back to this idea of the women's stories being written out of the biblical texts, even the names of women. You know, one commentator says there are a lot of women mentioned in the scriptures, but very few names. There's Lot's wife, or the women at the well. They aren't people. Whereas in the time, of course, Sophia, this is in, again, the Hebraic culture, Sophia was the Christian spirit of spiritual wisdom in women's spiritual circles, and in which she was viewed as the divine feminine. So in the Old Testament, it's there. Sophia's identity is hidden in the Old Testament by references to her in the lowercase word, wisdom. Now, I wonder which redactionist went through and checked all of that with the word spell or the word check. She was a part of the Judeo-Christian heritage of the West, but forgotten by the 6th and 7th century AD within a monotheistic patriarchal religion that denies feminine divinity. Very open question. I sit with that. I still sit with it. I think my recourse is, but the divine is genderless. I think that's where I can sit. But the reality is that divine, feminine divinity has been a part of our history. And it's very important for women to be aware that worship and knowledge of feminine divinity have disappeared because the patriarchy is based upon negating women's spiritual authority. The historical inferior status of women and the suppression of the goddess are related, just as the dominant position of men is related to monotheism. Now, that's a particular commentator's point of view. The line that strikes me is the patriarchy is based upon negating women's spiritual authority. And I don't think she's referring to her being a priest. I think she's referring to authority of your own spiritual truth. What you know to be true through these emotional, intuitive experiences, and you know that to be a truth that you dare not speak about for fear of retribution. I think that's the spiritual authority that is so dangerous in a patriarchal system. So then we come to the reading from Matthew. God loved Matthew. My goodness. God loved the Pharisees and the Sadducees. Jesus. You know, there are 87, this is a word search, there are 87 references to the Pharisees in the New Testament. Not many of them are positive. Jesus didn't like them. I just find this so ironic. Just so ironic that you read what was read out to us. The greatest among you will be your servant. For those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You shut the door of the kingdom of heaven in people's faces. You yourselves do not enter, nor will you let those enter who are trying to. Put that in the context of the inner heart, the inner space. When other parts of references to the Pharisees are brought up in Matthew, Jesus is talking about, I desire mercy, not rituals and sacrifice. The whole section is about being humble. The message of Jesus is about dealing with people in their places as they are. He deals with those who are deemed to be outside of the purview of God because they can't go to the temple. Mercy, humility, compassion for all, dignity for all who are created equal in the eyes of God. That's the message of Jesus. And so he's railing against this patriarchal system that wants to dismiss that, that can't have that. And they pick at him, and they pick at him, and they pick at him. Pick up all the little things he should or shouldn't be doing because it's against the law. And yet what Jesus is talking about, this is the ironic thing, what Jesus is talking about is a change of heart, about the inner space, about our own connection with the love of God, the sense of being welcomed into God's presence as we are. Not through ritual, not through having done all the right prayer attitudes or anything else, but as we are in humility and love. How ironic that now this man who criticized the patriarchy of the day is the founder of a patriarchal church for the last 1500 years. How ironic. My hope would be that in this, I won't see it, I mean, unless God lets me live for another 100 years, maybe, but my hope would be that the awakening that is going on in our culture, certainly in the Western culture, I don't know about other parts of the world, that the awakening will actually enable the rising up of something that is more about dignity and compassion for everyone in all situations. certainly could use that in Gaza right at the moment. So I just want to get to the part where I'll let you have a little conversation or sit there stunned or whatever. I found another piece. Betty Friedan is a well-known feminist writer of the 80s, 70s, 80s, and still writing. And she had some really great things to say. I love this. You know, if you go to the internet and you plug in 1950s women's experience under images, you get all these adverts that were in the magazines and the things then. I'm sure it's a joke. It must be a joke. How can buying a particular tie tell a woman he's boss? That's what it says. Show her it's a man's world because you're wearing a Van Heusen tie. Goodness me. Anyway, sorry. I just thought that was cute. What I do like in this piece is this one phrase, the problem that has no name. I just think this is brilliant. So Betty Friedan's research into the lives of 1950s middle-class white women in the US allowed for a new kind of understanding of women at that time. Friedan's research emphasised that women were in fact incredibly unhappy. These are the perfect women who had all the appliances. Remember, this is post-war, and suddenly, I mean, I remember getting our first refrigerator. I remember getting our first vacuum, and it was, oh, goodness. Or the washing machine. My mother didn't have to put the clothes in the copper and bang them with a stick. So this is the time when women have so much to keep them happy in the house. Friedan's research, they were actually very unhappy. She initially refers to this as a problem with no name and explains that women are kept from growing into their full capabilities. Through copious first-hand accounts, Friedan defines the problem as feelings of failure or nothingness. These are quotes from what the women said. Feelings of, is this all there is? Of guilt. Of longing for some unknown absence that was missing in their life. Women regularly felt guilty for experiencing such feelings when they were told by society that their happiness relied on the happiness of their children and their husband and all the great goods that a well-paid husband could bring home and keep her happy. I mean, I cringe. But what I want to pick out of that are the things I'd like us now to sit with. So, the feelings of failure and nothingness, and I'd like us now to put this into the context of being in the patriarchal church situation or theological overview, the tight control of the patriarchal theology, and see what speaks to you about your experience. The feelings of failure and nothingness. I know that one. Number of times I've been in Bible studies and the men had to correct me because I didn't get the exegesis right. All the red marks on my essays at theological college. But just the diminishment. Feelings of, is this all there is? Like, do I just keep going to Mass? Do I just keep taking the Eucharist and then I'm good with God? Is that all there is? The guilt. Guilt's a major one. That sits next to ostracism, I think. A longing for some unknown absence. One of my favourite sayings there. My firm belief is that we are deeply embedded in a longing for God, that our soul at its core has a longing for God. My deep, deep commitment to that. You can appease it with all the trappings of nice life, happy congregation, whatever. But it doesn't address that deep, deep longing. Fear of reprisal. Oh, well, you don't need to come and be on the roster next time because we didn't approve of what you did last time. Or it's probably better if you find another congregation to go to where they'll welcome your sorts of questions. I wonder if you're all here because of that. Get from growing into one's full capabilities spiritually. What's your full spiritual capability in the eyes of God? Do you ever think about that? You know, the classic question, what is God calling you to be as you are, in who you are? And I think it's at any age, because I think about that now for me. You know, retirement, moving into a different phase of life. What's God calling me into? Because I'm still pretty good, I think. Delusional, maybe, but I think I can still be a contributor. But then there's the powerlessness, the numbness of just keep on going, keep going to Mass, keep singing the same songs, keep doing it. Nothing's going to make any difference. Why bother? So that's just a few of the things that I think Betty Friedan points out about cultural patriarchy, and I'm putting it now in the context of our spiritual awareness and how we reclaim that deep inner spiritual truth that you know God loves you and no amount of any other influences can change that. I know that's true because you wouldn't be sitting here. So I thought that we'd have, I don't know, 10 minutes? 10 minutes enough? No? Next week? Just chat with one another or have a few questions or how do you want to do it? Do you want to just people chat together or?
We've got no speaker next week. It's 11 o'clock now. We have time for tea, and maybe that is a nice frame to have a think about this, how we can bring this up next week. Are we able to have your slides just so that we can have this slide up?
I'll leave them with.